Well, we went to Iowa. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And welcome to a special Iowa edition of the podcast.
Ooh.
We did not bring you the news last week because we were doing very important fact-finding.
Right. We were a part of the news last week.
That's right.
Or something.
As you might say, if we had been in Iowa any other weekend, except the weekend we were there, because we managed to go to Iowa for the only weekend of the year where not a single presidential candidate would be there.
Yeah. But it was fun because it allowed us to do some other things that I feel like we probably wouldn't had we had just been sitting at the soapbox listening to people yammer on and give stump speeches.
Right. And we've also heard most of these people's stump speeches.
We have.
But what we hadn't done is gone to all of their campaign offices and talked to all of their staff.
Right.
And so that
is
what we did last week.
Right. Yeah. We tried to get the goss.
Yeah.
So we're bringing you the Iowa hot goss.
I feel like we did. I feel like we learned a lot.
I just shimmied while I said hot
gas. Yeah,
class,
it's a podcast and you couldn't see that, but it was, I think you could hear his shimmy in his voice. So we obviously went to the state fair.
Right.
Because
we ate everything.
We went on a presidential food tour.
We did.
We decided.
You might have seen it on the gram.
That's right. We were carefully documenting it.
Yeah.
We had the pork chop on a stick, or I did, because Brent's a vegetarian. We
had fried Oreos.
Had fried Oreos. We couldn't find fried butter.
Had fried, right.
Fried butter's gone.
Had fried cheese curds.
We had fried cheese. Yes, we had fried cheese curds.
I had apple.
Oh yeah,
egg
an
roll.
Apple egg roll.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular
apple
over there.
Apple pie filling and an egg roll with caramel dipping sauce.
Looked delicious. I had cotton candy while he had that.
Right.
It was the greatest cotton candy a person's ever had.
Right. Oh, we had a delicious cinnamon roll.
Oh my god, it was the best cinnamon roll anyone's ever had.
We had,
I think that's the
strawberry smoothies.
That
we had
cinnamon
ice cream.
Roll is the only thing we talked about more than politics.
I know.
On that trip,
we were disgusting human beings.
But also
on the trip.
In many ways, wonderful human beings,
right.
Because we ate all the most wonderful things that you could possibly imagine were you at a state fair.
Right.
And I think, most importantly, we really got inside the heads of every presidential candidate who did it the weekend before.
Right.
Really became people of the people.
Right.
And
no one ate more food than we did, except maybe Pete Buttigieg, who literally ate everything, by the way.
So
there's
true.
Photographic evidence of it.
And he seems like a pretty small man. Like I was,
I know.
Like, of all people.
He went for it.
Like, I would make Bill de Blasio,
and he's gay.
Sure.
Shouldn't he be worried about body images or something like that?
Yeah, shouldn't he have body dysmorphia or something? We also voted 4 times in the Colonel poll.
Yeah, which
because,
is, you know, maybe
listen,
3 times more than you were supposed to, but fuck it.
No one was monitoring us.
No.
They should have stamped your hand or something.
Yeah.
But also, what is this, a scientific poll? You're putting corn kernels in a jar. And I feel like it still gave you a sense. We voted based on our level of enthusiasm for the candidate we were voting for.
It gives you the same sense that it's as scientific as any of the other polls and that all of the other polls are wildly different anyway. So it gives you the sense of just general feeling on the ground. And I would say that that was accurate-ish, maybe, right? I mean,
I think so.
It certainly tracked with real polls.
It tracked with real polls and also with our general feelings.
Right, exactly.
With the truthiness of the situation.
Right. And it was also very exciting because in the final tally, it was tied between, they did all the candidates individually. So you could vote for individual candidates, but then they also added up how many people voted for Democrats and how many voted for Republicans. Because they also had, containers for Trump and Bill Weld.
Yeah.
So they added those two up. Trump won like 97-3, but there were still 3% for Bill Weld. When you add up all the Democrats, they actually beat Trump.
Yeah.
And that's the first, though it was, normally it's a landslide for Republicans because it's a bunch of
fair
people.
Right. Once you're at the fair, you're aware of who's voting in this poll.
Right.
It's not.
Lila and I stood at the Corn Kernel poll for maybe like 5 minutes after we voted.
Just
one
to judge.
Day,
just to judge voters.
Like, right, to judge voters. But we also felt like we were pretty clear who was going to be voting, at least in which party, maybe not specifically for who.
I was only shocked by one person in that entire line.
Yeah.
And it was because it was an older woman whose daughter voted for Trump and then she went and voted for Biden. And I was like, well,
it's
this is weird of you, but congratulations for being the same member of the family.
But Biden won. And then in a very strong second place was Mayor Pete, which was interesting.
Which was holding strong the entire week that we were there, at least.
Yep.
And was surprising just because it gave him a bigger lead over the field than I think regular polls are giving him. But it did seem like there was a lot of enthusiasm on the ground for him there.
Yeah, we saw a lot of people wearing Mayor Pete shirts or Boot Edge right. shirts. There was a lot of that.
Even holding
around.
Signs in places where I was like, why do you have a sign? Where'd you get this sign? Nobody knows.
Yeah. Warren was in third. Harris was in fourth.
Right.
Yeah. Sanders was in fifth. And then it was just sort of like a big old drop off.
And there were some people who you could sense there was actually no enthusiasm for.
Yeah.
Like there were some people who are polling better in national polls, or not well, but in the realm of places in national polls, who just like weren't placing at all there. Yeah. Like Gillibrand had like
a 12 corn kernels.
Right, like a number of kernels you could count with your eyes. in her jar. And that was, you know, they would tell you how many jars in.
Yeah.
They were, and so she was only one jar in, and she had, like, a minuscule number of kernels in it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there like, an amount that was, like, equivalent to, like, a Seth Moulton type.
Right. And we did see him.
Yes.
He was the one, I hesitate to say, real candidate we saw. Because
he's not... He's
because
realer,
you could also count his votes with your eyes.
Exactly. He's realer than Ben Glebe, who was the only other candidate that
but
was there.
But only barely.
But right. only barely. Ben Glebe is
like
a comedian who's basically making a comedy special out of pretending to run for
president. Because he was walking around the whole day that we were there, and he was just like, had a camera crew following him around.
Yeah.
And was just
and he snubbed us, and then we were happy about it because we realized he was basically just doing this for a comedy special.
Yeah.
We didn't want to be in his comedy special.
Yeah.
And also, we at some point heard him say, you know, the one good thing Trump has done, and we walked away.
Like,
we were like, never mind with that. but so, in any case, but it, that was our chance to participate in democracy on the ground in Iowa.
Right.
And we did not see a lot of Trump shirts and hats there.
No, I was very excited.
On Thursday, we saw almost none.
I was afraid that, right.
On
and
Saturday,
we
saw
Saturday,
a few more.
But it was very MAGA free. I was afraid that we were going to be seeing a lot of
red hats. The most MAGA-ish thing that happened there was they played the national anthem the Thursday morning while Brett and I were trying to find a cinnamon bun. And it was awkward.
It was bad. Everybody stopped, put their hands on their heart, looked in different directions as if they were looking at a flag, but there wasn't one that anyone could see.
And then the person singing
where we
it went off
he
key.
He messed up and he forgot the lyrics.
He forgot the lyrics at one point. So everyone, imagine you're in like a huge road with just like thousands of people all facing different directions with their hands on their hearts to a speaker that you can't see as someone very poorly sings the national anthem.
It was weird.
For what felt like 100 hours or more. I mean, it was, and I'm like, you know, I'm not much of a patriotic pageantry type, and I was just like, am I going to be shot here?
I know.
Am I going to be, how aggressively patriotic do I need to be in
do
order to
kneel?
Not be noticed? Right. Yeah, I did ask Brent if we should kneel.
Right.
We felt like, given the context, it might be a death sentence.
It didn't seem right.
No.
I mean, it seemed right. But
it seemed
seem,
right. It didn't
it seemed
safe.
Unsafe,
right? It didn't seem safe.
Yeah.
But so, in between our two fair days, we spent a full day on Friday just going to every office we could find an address for and just, like, checking out what was going on.
And gallivanting around.
And gallivanting around, which is another. And in Des Moines, when you gallivant around, you run into the same people over and over and over again. We literally got stuck waiting for a train to move for 30 minutes in the morning while we were trying to get to our rental car on foot. Found a woman who was also on foot trying to get to work or something.
Saw her at a coffee shop later.
That's right. Just all the way across town, too. But just like, we just ran into people left, right, and center everywhere we went. We ran into somebody from Sanders' office at a gay bar that night.
Right.
I mean,
I ran into people from high school just like wandering the streets.
That's right. Yeah.
And Des Moines is not, I mean, it's a small town, but it's also like
250,000
people.
Right.
So it's like, it's weird that that was happening. But anyway.
Yeah. In any case. Before we dive into the office visits, we have to discuss the main conspiracy theory that's going on right now in Iowa that we're not the only people who've noticed it, but we noticed it without knowing other people had noticed it.
Right.
And then followed up on the on the interwebs and found that lots of people had noticed it.
Right.
There is only one kind of candidate sign that you see in Des Moines right now.
Right, yard signs.
Yard signs, which is weird because there's campaigns everywhere.
Right.
And those signs are Tulsi Gabbard signs.
Yes.
They are everywhere. There are no other signs on the ground aside from somebody who's running for city council.
Right.
And there are billboards for her, but there is no campaign to speak
of. A soldier's heart.
A soldier's heart.
Yeah.
First of all, her yard signs look like a disaster movie.
They
poster.
Totally do.
They have like a weird sunset on them in the letters.
In the logo.
In the
way
that you might do for a movie about going to the moon or something.
Or, it's like Tulsi Gabbard's star of Armageddon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's also, because, you know, we looked up where all the campaign offices were. There were candidates we could not find campaign offices for. Some of those candidates, we assume it's because they don't have much of a ground operation going on.
Hers was definitely one.
Hers was not.
So we're confused about
who who's handing out the signs? Because even as everyone was like, well, maybe that's her strategy.
Right.
Maybe she's just putting out, like, somebody has to give you the signs to put on your yard. You have to get them from somewhere. If I've learned anything from my own mother, who is like the official sign hander outer of her town, you would think that the town that she lives in upstate New York is like a bastion of Democratic, you know, politics because of the way the signs look there. It's a Republican town. It's just that they have one person handing out signs, and it's my mom. Right. And she's literally, like, putting them in people's back seats and then seeing them later and being like, I stuck a sign in your back seat. I expect to see it up later. Like, she's like, putting her personal relationships on the line to get these signs up. Right. So I know it's not that easy to get people to put signs out, especially this early in a campaign with 100,000 candidates.
Right. And also, where are they getting the signs?
Where? What is the location of the signs? Who's handing them out? And we heard conspiracy theories from everyone. We heard them on the internet.
I immediately assumed that Russians were doing
it. Well, and you weren't the only one, I assume, who made that conclusion. But, like, John Delaney's staffer was like, oh, I heard people from New Mexico and Arizona are handing them out. And I was like, why there specifically?
I know.
And, like, why are you guys got, like, the other campaigns are obviously also gossiping about conspiracy theories about the Tulsi gas. Like, everyone has noticed it. So that was a little weird.
It was weird.
But we didn't get to talk to any of her staffers because they don't exist.
Right.
So the first stop that we made was to the main Democrats' office.
Right. The state party office.
That was, like, a very informative visit because they were very loose-lipped about just whoever you asked about.
Talk.
They were ready to chat. So, and by the way, we're not giving names for any of these staffers because we're telling you things that potentially they didn't mean for us to broadcast to you. But these are all conversations that we had informally at these offices.
Right.
And so we were talking to somebody at the Democrats' office who's just like the person who is at the front of the Democrats' office.
Yeah.
Who's
a different person.
Or a different person who's not at the front. A person in the back. No, but just the person who greeted us at the main Iowa Democrats' office. And we asked him, Who was on the ground early? Who has the best ground game going on?
Right.
And he gave us a surprising answer. One of the answers wasn't so surprising. It was Warren.
We already knew that. I was going to say, we knew about that. You can read any article on any news site talking about how she's basically, like, made major plays with staff in all of these early states.
Totally.
She's done the same thing in Nevada. It's how she's spending her money. And so that was no mystery to us.
Right.
Or to anyone.
And she's sort of relying on doing a big grassroots thing because she's not taking meetings with
governors.
So she's not raising money the traditional way.
Right.
The other person they said, though, which we heard again and again and was a surprise, was Booker.
Cory Booker.
Booker was in there early. When you talk to his staff, and we'll talk a little bit about our visit to their office in a little bit, you get a sense of how invested he is in Iowa.
Right.
It's heavily invested and for a long time.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. And so the campaign, the staffers on the ground were not surprised to reveal this information. They have been seeing evidence of this. But this is not getting picked up by any major media sources. This isn't getting discussed outside of Iowa. And so for, like, us coming in from the outside, we had no idea how big Booker's operation was there.
Right.
And we heard that over and over, that he was in there early, that because of that, him and Warren kind of got the best staffers.
Yep.
You know, because there's a lot more candidates than usual and the same number of staffers to go around.
Right.
And so the guy at the Democrats' office was saying, you know, some of these people have brought in their own staffers from their Senate offices or whatever.
Right.
And that can be challenging because Iowa has a kind of unique media market.
Right. That was the other thing that I found to be very interesting, because he was like, it's a lot of small media markets, but that almost makes it harder to manage. He was like, literally just when you're talking about some of these rural places, he was like, you drive 10 minutes and you're on a new local AM radio station, which is what people are listening to as they're driving around.
Yeah. And also he said it has more newspapers per capita than any other state. So even though there's,
because of the reason that everything is spread out.
Right.
So it's like one small town might need a different newspaper than another small town.
Which is when Brent revealed to us that when he lived in Keokuk, Iowa, the local newspaper came twice a day.
Yeah. It came twice.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. For a long time.
I mean, that's
insane.
At my
grandma's house. Yeah.
He was sort of talking about how having experienced staffers who know the Iowa media markets is really important if you're going to have a successful campaign. Because just because you have someone who understands how to run media for a campaign in New York or somewhere like that doesn't mean that you understand how the media market in Iowa works.
Right.
And so we found that interesting and a compelling reason that some campaigns who got in late might suffer, especially in rural parts of the state, for reasons that have nothing to do with their messaging, but have more to do with their inability to get that messaging to anyone.
Yep.
He also said what people are always saying, which is, he was like, yeah, well, Iowa voters feel ignored like 75% of the time. So this is just like our one moment of glory. And I was like, because I tried to make it a point to ask at every one of these offices, or not to ask, but to say, you know, We came here from California, and part of the reason we came is because campaigns do not come to us.
Right.
So you are used to having a campaign come to Iowa every 4 years and really, like, set up shop here and, like, come and talk to your voters. But campaigns do not come and talk to voters in California.
Yeah.
And, you know, we went to a Liz Warren rally last night. That is the second candidate I've ever seen live in California in a non-paying capacity.
Right.
And it's because candidates don't come here. And we moved up our primary this year. That's going to change, hopefully.
Yeah.
But so I was just saying, you know, for me, this is a really exciting thing to see because I've never lived anywhere where I've ever had any evidence that a candidate wanted my vote.
And that was shocking to many
literally
people.
Everybody.
Right.
We talked to the woman at the Democrats booth at the fair, and she was like, you know, I've never thought about that. And I was like,
I never assumed that every human in the United States didn't get a personal audience with everyone who was running for president. It's like, but that's what goes on there.
Right. But so it was cute that they felt ignored the other 75% of the time. I was like, getting 25% of the attention is still way out of proportion to what Iowa's population would indicate it deserves.
Yeah.
But we heard that over and over.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Yeah.
We used it as, in part, an opportunity to let them know that they had a responsibility to address issues that affect voters outside of Iowa because they're the only ones who get a chance to ask the questions.
Yeah.
But so our first stop was Warren's office because obviously
that was
the most excited place we were most excited to go.
Right.
Her staff was delightful, as we weren't surprised to hear. They were out of merch.
Ugh.
But that's because people love Liz Warren.
Right, I know.
So we couldn't get any merch from them, which is too bad because that was the merch we were really
like,
in the market for.
We got merch literally everywhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got John Delaney t-shirts, which we can only wear ironically.
Exactly.
Like years from now. Like, because you're not going to catch them in us now.
No.
But, or catch us in them now. But, no.
No Warren merch. We spoke to her regional field organizer, though, who was a delight. She was somebody who, she was from upstate New York, but she'd been living in Iowa and worked on a bunch of campaigns in Iowa for a few years now.
Yeah.
And she not only told us where we could find Pete Buttigieg's offices, because that was not yet public knowledge.
Right.
But also, you know, a little bit about some of the other projects that campaign is doing.
Right.
And, you know, they've been there a long time.
Right, they've been there a long time.
They're, like, manning
also
a community garden
and hosting
beer nights. And, like, they have a lot of stuff going on.
So beyond sort of, like, just the general sort of, like, door knocking that you would do, they're basically sort of, they're doing, like, more community outreach. They've, like, taken over, like, this, like, empty garden sort of, like, in a, you know, one of the sort of, like, not great parts of town that they're sort of, like, working with the community with. And then they're handing out the food to, like, you know, poor families, and so they're doing stuff like that.
Yeah, and a lot, you know, Harris's campaign was doing a school supply drive. A lot of them are trying to do charity
and
work and
stuff
like that, to ingratiate themselves to the local community. We did find out from her that, because we asked, like, do the campaign staffers all know each other?
Right, because there can't, how many,
I mean, how many people are there?
Campaigns,
right.
Like,
And she was like, oh, yeah, we have Friendship 2020 drinks nights, which we thought was adorable.
Like, yeah, they have, like, a happy hour Thursday night with, like, all of the campaigns, which is, it's cute.
Yeah. But surprisingly, that was an office that was hard to find the address for.
Right.
It was in a place where they were like, we love it here because we get people passing by and stopping in. And we were like, but you can't find out where this is.
It's not on the
You
internet.
Can only find it if you accidentally stop by.
Yeah, it took some real research to figure out where some of these offices were.
Some digging. Some serious digging.
Yeah. But you know what? That's what we do.
That's what we do. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and some of these offices, I mean, we found Pete Buttigieg's office, but the Democrats didn't know where that office was.
No,
and
I know.
That's surprising considering that it was in the same building as
the Polk County Democrats. Right, and their office was closed.
Right. They're in a building that is a weird building because it's on like a big like strip mall street.
Right, and you can't see it from the street.
You can't see
it
from
no
the street.
Way.
And it's in a building with like a bunch of lobbying groups.
Yeah.
Which I've never seen in like a place that is, you know, I mean, it makes sense because Iowa is the sort of center of this one kind of political event.
Sure.
But
yeah.
It's really weird that Democrats for Israel have an office in Des Moines.
Right.
It's not, you know, like, is it weird that the Sierra Club has an office there? Maybe
no,
not, but also
not.
A little bit. It's weird that they have one in the same building as the Polk County Democrats, and Polk County is where Des Moines is.
Yeah.
Democrats for Israel. And now, Pete Buttigieg for president.
Right. And they were lovely.
They were lovely.
We have.
They had not gotten any visitors, and they were ready for us.
Yes.
We
they
got a lot of.
All, we have all the world's Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Buttons. If there's ever a run on those,
we're going to be
millionaires.
Gonna be rich. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I do feel like one, you know, I have issues with Pete Buttigieg from a policy perspective.
Sure.
But he has the best logo / graphics of
really
any
does.
Candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, there is no.
He's putting his face on the buttons, though. It was funny. I was talking to somebody yesterday and I was showing them the buttons and they were like, does he know that he shouldn't put his face on buttons?
He looks like, Well, he's like the Mad Magazine.
I know.
Like, what's his face?
Yeah, but his logo is good.
His logo is great. The colors are great.
Right.
It's got this retro vibe that's kind of fun. Yeah. I mean,
which is what Beto, I think, is trying to go for, but that looks more...
Morbid. Like, it looks morbid. It's black and white, yeah. And it's mostly black. Yeah. It's like a black sign that has, like, a few letters on it.
Yeah. Also, all of the... They all had paperwork at the Iowa State Fair. Or not paperwork, but just sort of, like, you know, takeaways, basically.
Oh, yeah, like pamphlets.
And, yeah. And Beto's was, like, copy paper, photocopied. I was like,
it's like they're not even serious about running for president.
Like, do better. Like, I realize you may have run out, but, like, also don't run out at the fair.
Exactly. Also, if you have run out, have others.
I know.
Somewhere in the state of Iowa.
Right.
And the whole state of Iowa is, like, 3 hours from
Print
Des Moines.
More.
Print more of them.
Yeah.
Just, like, find more.
Right.
So, that.
Yeah.
But I will say, for the Buttigieg office, because I also tried to ask in every office, like, how did you end up on this campaign?
That was, yeah.
And they were jazzed about Pete Buttigieg. Well,
and
there.
That's what, like, because we had debate, he was actually in Iowa while we were there, and not at the fair, but that day, because we asked, we were like, why is he doing so well, and also, like, what, and they were just sort of like, because he's freaking awesome. I mean, they were, like, really into it. They were, and when we said, we were like, we almost drove out to Oskaloosa, which was, like, an hour outside of the city, and they were like, oh my gosh, you have to, you should have, like, I mean, like, they were, and that was actually, like, fairly consistent, actually. And that made me actually really feel, like, sort of good.
I mean,
just because, like, you know, I like a lot of these people, too.
At least
for specific reasons. And then I don't like them for other reasons. But, like, for the most part, we found people who were passionate about the people that they were working for, with some exceptions, certainly. But, like, they were, they are convinced that he is just, like, greatest candidate that has ever run. Like, everyone in there was just sort of like, you gotta meet him, you gotta shake his hand, you gotta be in his airspace, you gotta, it's just like,
and in a way that actually, because they don't have any field offices set up yet, but he's like killing it right now in Iowa, and you know, I have been on the record saying that I think he's having a month, and like, I don't know that this is like a sustainable amount of momentum for Pete Buttigieg. But in sort of thinking about why he's having a month as someone who has no field operation to speak of yet, because I had been sort of thinking to myself, like, what the hell is going on here?
I know.
How does people even know who Pete Buttigieg is?
I know.
And it must be that everywhere he goes, he is a quality candidate. He does, I'm sure, impressive in person.
Bet he is. Yeah.
And so I'm sure that people, you know, in Iowa who actually get a chance to interact with people and, you know, get to speak to their neighbors from a personal perspective are probably pretty jazzed about him right now because he's probably a great candidate. And you could see that his office was, like, very enthusiastic about him. And not all the offices we visited were that enthusiastic about their candidate.
No.
But then we went to Booker.
Yes.
That was also in the neighborhood. So Buttigieg, Warren, and Booker were all in one part of town.
Yeah,
and then a lot of them were on the other side of town.
Yeah.
Booker's office is huge.
Yes.
Very well staffed.
Yeah.
Very impressive. And they... The woman that we spoke to there, who is one of his press people, we asked her how she ended up on the campaign, because she was actually from California originally.
Right.
And she'd been
a block away from where we are recording this podcast right now.
And she had been at the state party in Iowa before this.
Yeah.
And we were like, what made you choose Booker? And she was just like, we saw how serious he was about Iowa at the state party, because he was the first candidate in to fundraise for local candidates.
Right.
He was coming and he was doing events with local candidates.
Yeah.
So he came in early and serious, and because of that has a lot of endorsements from local party heads and things like that.
He has the most in-state endorsements, which I found to be surprising.
Which is fascinating because he's not getting any sort of play for any of this, and his polling numbers are not reflecting it.
No.
But they were basically like, we know how this goes. We know that everyone gets a starring moment, you know, and it moves. And so they were saying their motto.
Right. They had a sign in their office that said, organize, 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 get hot at the end.
Yeah. So basically, I think they're trying to sort of, they're like building all of these bridges. And then if you do see Booker suddenly surge at the end, don't be shocked.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, it could also not work out. The timing could be wrong. He could surge in 1 month from now and be gone by the end. But
I also, and you and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday, I think on the way to the Warren event too, because, you know, I think that he sort of more than a lot of people stands to get some of the Biden voters when they all decide and re-remember that Joe Biden is a terrible candidate for president.
That's right.
Because he's a bit of a moderate.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a lot of Biden's support is from African-Americans, and that's not to say they're only going to just find the next African-American candidate, but I mean, like, they, no, have, a, Booker they have a similar has, politics.
Right,
I mean,
and Booker also has focused on issues that are of import to the African-American community, more so than other candidates.
Right, and certainly more so than Kamala Harris, who has sort of, like, her own issues with that community anyway from her time as a prosecutor
Attorney General.
And so it makes sense to me, like, I can see that happening as clear as day. And also the other thing that we sort of like continue to remind people is that, like, it's weird because it feels early to us because we've been paying attention to it since January. And more people are paying attention because it seems like a winnable election. So I think there's like a lot of people have been like, you know, on the trail of this campaign. But also, it's still so freaking early. I mean, so early. I mean, like, Obama was in, like, fourth or fifth place at this point in 2007, and nobody was paying attention to him, really, until sort of, like, November of,
well, I think, you know, that's late, the Booker, late fall. The Booker strategy,
it's that strategy
is to recognize that, especially in these early states, the things shuffle really fast, and at the last minute, they can change very dramatically, because a lot of the time, we get a lot of shocks out of Iowa.
Right.
Iowa is often voting for someone that you're like, really?
Wait.
You know, like thinking about how many votes Sanders got in Iowa, who are all these people that were voting for Bernie Sanders? No one talked to them.
Yeah.
And so I think he's sort of banking on the fact, you know, I think he probably seeing the field knew that he wasn't going to be a front runner early on, especially because he doesn't have any flashy policies because he can't come out for anything because he was taking big money for so long.
Right.
So he's, you know, the moderate.
He is fairly engaging.
He's very engaging. He's a good speaker. The moderates really have to think about what their strategy is beyond just like having a plan all the time or having a flashy thing that they want to be in favor of. And so for someone like him, the Iowa is more of a sort of like the heat game in Iowa is more of a sort of like, when do I pull out the big guns of like my endorsements and my whatever?
I think that, like, what would be, because he's not going to win Iowa.
Right.
I don't think, but although maybe he will. I don't know. But I mean, like,
but having like a top three placement in Iowa puts him in the race.
I was just about to say, if he can get third or even like a close fourth and get out of there alive,
because then suddenly everyone drops out. Suddenly he gets a little bit more attention. Suddenly there's all this, you know, suddenly there's a chance for him to make a big play in. You know, certainly on Super Tuesday, because suddenly he can come in and be like, I am actually from an urban state, essentially. I know New Jersey is not really an urban state, but it is in the sense that it's outside of New York City and is basically a suburb of New York City.
Could potentially do well in South Carolina.
He could do well in South Carolina. So there's like a bunch of states after Iowa where he's got an advantage that he doesn't have in New Hampshire, Iowa, sort of.
Yeah. Right.
And those weird little states. Yeah. And so, like, for him, it's a smart strategy, I think, to just sort of be like, I'm going to get out of Iowa with, you know, with notice.
Yeah.
And then we'll see what happens.
Right.
Then I can be in the game.
Yeah.
After that, we went to Kamala's office. Yes. Her field operator there was lovely.
Yes.
That
was the best office that we went to, too.
The prettiest. But they had really decorated that within an inch of their lives.
They had an artist.
Yeah. Someone
in there,
was doing murals.
Who worked on that, And they had a few murals up there and had painted. And, like, because a lot of these are sort of, like, not fancy offices. And you wouldn't expect
the depressing temporary office space.
Right, exactly. But they had really sort of, like, tried to make that seem like a livable place.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the office itself was nicer. The field operator that we spoke to was a native Iowan. And so and we asked her, she had a really good answer for why she was in
another
that campaign.
Another person who was, like, passionate about the campaign that she was working
for. Because that, I was thinking to myself, like, if you're someone who's pursuing campaign work in Iowa right now, there's a lot of jobs out there, but you don't really get to decide which one offers you a position.
No,
it's more a sign of professionalism that you would be enthusiastic about the candidate, even if you're not, than anything else. Like, there were some offices where I was like, oh, you are not professionals here. I can see, like, some of the offices had lovely people, but they were not professionals, and you could tell. And so this felt like she handled that question very professionally, even though, like, and she had said, you know, there were a few candidates that I had my eye on, but she really stuck out to me because of the Kavanaugh hearing. And, like, you know.
And she was like, I'm a survivor.
Right.
And she really, she spoke very eloquently about, like, why she ultimately ended up there.
Yes.
And I appreciated that.
And she also said, adorably, that her dad won't commit to caucus to Kamala until he gets to ask her a personal question. In a very Iowan way, she was like, because we were talking about sort of like the difference between being a California voter and an Iowan voter, and she was like, my dad won't even sign a commit to caucus card for us until he gets to meet her personally. And I was like, You could never dream of such a thing in California. But there and both there and in the Booker office, we spoke a bit about housing issues in Iowa, which was really interesting from different perspectives. So in the Booker office, they were talking about rural housing issues, that there's sort of like no one wants to build in rural parts of the state. And so because of that, there are issues with people being able to find safe housing that's up to code and things like that. Because one of the things that I kept bringing up as we were talking about, like, what are these candidates going to be able to offer to urban voters once they're out of this state? Well, you know, and do they address these issues on the trail? They would be like, you know, we don't have the same housing issues in Iowa, but we do have housing issues. Because I kept bringing up that we have housing issues. And California is nothing but a giant housing issue at the moment. And that's true of a lot of states with large urban areas in them. And then Kamala's office talked a little bit about some of, you know, that Des Moines is having some similar housing pressures where people are being priced out of their neighborhoods or, you know, things like that in the suburbs of Des Moines, which is a little closer to what we're experiencing. But it sounds like the whole country is having housing issues. So if you're worried that you aren't having – if you're worried that half the country is not experiencing a housing issue, turns out there's nowhere safe for you. Turns out there's nowhere you can go. Wherever you go, there's housing issues. In any case, that was where I started asking the question that I am gonna that I asked as many campaigns as I could about. I said if I ever got the chance to ask a candidate a question, and I thought of it because her dad wanted to ask Kamala a personal question. I said I would ask, you know, you come to states like Iowa and you are asked to address rural issues over and over, and those are issues that people sort of like act like never get the attention.
But that doesn't affect the majority of the country.
But a majority of the country lives in cities. So what is a policy, people-wise, So what is a policy that you have that will have a positive impact on urban voters? And by urban voters, I don't mean that as a euphemism. The other thing is there's no language to discuss urban voters that doesn't sound like euphemisms. By urban voter, I mean people who live in cities. That's not a euphemism for African-American voters. They, like everyone, also live in cities, but not exclusively. Just like, you know, everyone else, but I said, you know, that's if I ever got a chance in one of these forums to ask someone like this a question, because the largest city in Iowa is Des Moines. It's 200,000 people. And what I think I learned from being there was Des Moines, very nice city, very relaxed place. It feels like a small town compared to LA or New York City or really any reasonably sized city. It is it is not facing the kinds of city issues that we are facing here. Some of them are similar. Just like people are people. But there is nowhere in Iowa that you would have to campaign to people where you would have to address some of the serious issues that face large urban areas. And we're talking about large urban areas where this large urban area that we're in has more people in it than the entire state of Iowa. So, you know, we're talking about by a long shot. So we're talking about, you know, issues that affect millions more people than the people, you know, than the issues that affect the people of Iowa. So I just thought, I started asking that at every office and they were like, oh, interesting. And I was like, I guess these were their Iowa staff, so they hadn't thought about any of these things. But I did think it was kind of like a fun opportunity to get to put that in their heads. And then we found John Delaney's office by accident.
Because you couldn't not find it.
John Delaney has the best location. He had a permanent sign. Like, it was like he had his own strip mall open.
He basically did. And it was a huge space, too.
Huge space. It looked like a big operation.
I guess when you're self-funding as a billionaire, you're just like a general rich person, then you can have a nice office space on a nice street and put a huge sign out in front.
Yeah, you can look as legit as you want.
Because I'll tell you one thing. We weren't planning to go.
No. We didn't even think to Google where his office was. It was not even on our radar. We were just like, well, we'll go to the real offices. And then if we have time, we'll see if we can find everyone else. But like, we literally couldn't find like Castro's office. We weren't going to go to John Delaney's office. But we did.
And I actually really liked her a lot, too. She was one of the people who maybe didn't give sort of like a very full-throated
endorsement of her candidate.
But she was lovely, and she was from Iowa.
Talked to us for a while.
We chatted with her for
definitely native Iowan from Steve King's district. She really understood, I think, what centrist Iowa is all about. Gave us lots of swag. They were giving away books there, too. If you need a free anything, a new wardrobe, John Delaney's office is where it's at. You can get 100,000 t-shirts, buttons, and books. You could be entertained by a self-important boring billionaire for untold amounts of time based on all the free stuff that was available there. And she was one of the ones who gossiped with us a little bit about the Tulsi Yard sign situation.
Yeah, that's right.
But so Delaney has 7 offices in Iowa, but only 1 in New Hampshire. So he's betting big on Iowa.
Right. We saw a billboard of his, too, on a very random location.
Oh, my God.
Like, next basically, to like, in an alley.
In an alley next to, like...
parking lot,
kind of. Yeah, but it's, like, also next to, like, one of the 2 gay bars in all of Des Moines.
Yeah.
So it was, like, weird.
Which had, like, all of the candidate signs up
except
in
his.
The window of. So, except yeah. That's probably why he put it there.
Yeah.
He was like, I need to be represented at
the These people need to know that I'm here, too. But when we asked her how she ended up with a job, it was basically like, well, I couldn't get a job in the newspaper.
Right.
Yeah. But this was another place where one of the weird themes of all of this was that no one could tell us where Joe Biden's office was.
No. They couldn't even tell us at the Democratic Party headquarters.
No. They hadn't seen a staffer of his. They had no evidence that he existed. And she was the one who, she was the only one who was like, I think it's somewhere
across the street. And then we ultimately found it.
It was literally across the street.
Pretty much.
It was on the back
like
side,
over.
But it was a back side. It was like right across.
One
she could
over.
Have walked there quicker than we drove there.
Yeah, for sure.
It was literally the back of his office was facing the front of their office.
Yeah.
And yet she was like, had no idea if it was real or not.
Right.
Which was an indication to us that Joe Biden has not done much to establish a presence or a ground game in Iowa. And the New York Times has an article to that effect today. So,
well, and if you'll I think it also goes to that says 2 things. A, not a great ground game so far. B, not trying to have people stop in and see them.
No.
Like, this was the thing that I remember, and we probably talked about it on the podcast, but I was at the fair and back in Des Moines in 2015.
Right.
During that primary. And where Hillary Clinton's office was in Des Moines was the best kept secret in town.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it was like... That was, you were not to find that place.
And
we never did. We literally did not find it.
You went to Bernie's office, you got t-shirts, you did a whole thing.
Yeah.
Could not get to Hillary Clinton's office.
Nope.
The front runner.
Right.
Who she supposedly had all this support.
Right. She was not trying to see you.
No. And that's, so we, you know, in order to wet our palates, we went to Bernie's office next before heading to Biden's.
Right.
Because it was getting later in the day by that point, and we thought,
let's
prioritize a little. They were as friendly as you might expect.
Right, they were
Bernie people.
Hippies.
It was hippies.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They were going to be canvassing. They tried to rope us into canvassing.
Right.
They told us about an app where you can canvass your friends.
Yeah.
Warren's got an app like that, too. And I did talk a little bit with them about the importance of finding sort of voters outside of the traditional DNC lists.
Yes.
Because they are very much about that, because that's what running a grassroots campaign is really like. And Warren's campaign is now trying to do the same thing. But a lot of these other campaigns work off of their door knocking lists are lists that they got from other Democratic campaigns.
Right.
So it's just like the same people over and over again.
Yeah.
And it also might explain why they sometimes do better than their polling would suggest for Bernie's campaign.
Sure.
Because they're finding voters that are not traditional voters. But, you know, it was like peak Bernie in there.
Yeah, it was.
It was really like was. Everyone had like a, there was a lot of like flowy dresses and tattoos.
Yep.
And just like a chill vibe.
Mm-hmm.
They were happy to chat with you forever if you wanted to. You know, it felt homey in the way that.
It did, yeah.
Which was a contrast to Biden's office,
yikes.
Where we went next.
Yikes, guys.
They exist.
They do.
The office exists, and not only exists, but like, I think would probably have been legitimately shocked that no one else knows where they are.
Oh, probably.
Because
I think they think that they're
doing
really,
it.
Really, really doing the work.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, they seem self-important in a way that would suggest that they think that they're, like, the central
and
campaign.
And, like, look, did we, like, you know, we went in and, like, look, we don't like John Delaney.
Right.
But we had a lovely conversation with the
we
woman.
We went in with
office.
An open mind.
We are not a huge Amy Klobuchar
But had a great
fan,
time in her office.
We had a great time in her office, and we'll get to that in a second. So we were prepared to just, like,
have
you know, we're not huge Beto fans. That was a lovely office.
Yeah.
But, like, so we did not go in just... So, because I know that if you're listeners of this podcast,
you might think
that we're not huge Joe Biden fans.
Right. You might think that we went in seething.
You might think, right. And that is just not true.
No.
I mean, we were ready to listen and chat up whoever was around.
As we had been doing all day with many candidates that
we don't necessarily
support.
Particularly care for, right. They were not happy to see us.
Not happy to see us, kind of patronizing tools.
Oh,
we
no.
walked in and we
Definitely
our usual
were.
Line was we would walk in and be like, listen, we missed so-and-so at the fair.
Right.
So we just thought we would stop by and see
what
your campaign's up
to. We're just kind of like, we're big, you know, we're into politics. And so we're just like doing our thing around town. And he like interrupted us and was like, well, he's not here.
Right. As if we were complete idiots.
Right. As if we thought Joe Biden was like doing like work in the back
dingy office hours
room.
In the back. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And we were like,
no, yeah.
We know.
We're aware that Joe Biden is not in this office right now.
Right. And so after he told us that, then he offered us some signs.
Tried to rush us out with some signs.
Right.
And then tried to walk away, but we were not having that.
No.
So we forced him to stand there and talk to us.
I mean,
I know. I was ready to make him chat with us for longer than he was comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so here's what it felt like.
Yeah.
It felt like they thought we didn't need a pitch. Like, the pitch is so obvious for Joe Biden.
Right.
That they, 'cause everyone else, when you would ask them, how'd you end up on this campaign, either they would give you the wrong answer, but tell you right. It was a great campaign.
Right.
Or they would tell you why they were so excited about the candidate.
Right.
But no one didn't try to give us the pitch. And so right. we had to it was like pulling teeth to get him right. to tell us why he was on this fucking campaign right. in the first place.
And he never really said specifically, although I will give him credit for the fact that he really does like Joe Biden.
He's a guy who likes Joe Biden.
He has been trying to work for Joe Biden. He tried to intern for him when he was VP. So we did at least get that out of him. So, like, at least he was not just sort of like, you know, oh, I just ended up here because Joe,
right.
you know, it's Joe, you know.
There were no women in the office, though.
Obviously.
It was like, you know how...
It wouldn't have been a safe place for them,
no.
I don't think.
You probably. Know how when everyone was going on about Bernie Bros, and we were like, who are these Bernie Bros? Because I have been to Bernie events many times at this point, and I don't know who we're talking about here.
These were the Biden Bros.
The Biden Bros.
I'm sure as soon as we left, they resumed their game of beer pong.
Yes. Like, that was literally, the, like,
right?
It was like bro central. In there, and this guy had worked for Hillary in Wisconsin, so he was a fan of the classic "we don't really need to give you a pitch," I guess, because
right.
that was her strategy there.
Right. I was gonna say
it was just
there,
like
there was a Hillary campaign office in Wisconsin.
Exactly. It was like, they were sort of the vote for us because you should vote for us.
Right.
Office.
They basically right. They're the they gave the Joe Biden response to why you should vote
yeah.
for Joe Biden.
Vote for him because right. he can win.
Right.
Hold your nose if you have to.
Right. You might like literally everyone else better, and everyone else might also be better on all of the issues.
Right. He might not have any issues that you agree with, but you got to vote for him because that's what you should do.
Right.
Like, that, the idea...
Vote for Joe Biden. He's...
Here.
Better, not as good as everyone else, but he's not brain damaged.
That's
like, that's
right.
the pitch that they're giving right,
right.
now.
Right. Yeah. That's... And that was palpable in the office.
It was.
Which... was wild after, in contrast to all these other offices.
Yeah.
Because we went to offices with people who are definitely not going to win in Iowa.
Right.
Who couldn't have been more pleasant or more excited to, and that's, so the two offices that we went to next were two that we put at the end of the day because we don't care that much about the candidates.
Right.
One was Beto. His office was filled with, they were very young.
Yeah.
It seemed cool in there. They had a dog.
And I kind of liked that office too.
Yeah,
it was a nice office. But it was cute.
Yeah. They had a cute dog.
World's cutest dog.
Very cute. Someone came in with cupcakes or coffees or something while we were there, which seemed very Beto.
And they, I think, directed us to the campaign coffee shop, too.
So there was also, after all of this, we went to a coffee shop that supposedly has a lot of campaign staffers, but instead we ran into the woman from the train while we were there.
Right.
But this was another office where they told us how much they love campaign work instead of how much they love working on this campaign.
Oh, yeah.
But they were young and inexperienced, and none of them were from Iowa.
Right.
So that was something we took note of because we were like... He could have gotten staffers from Iowa if he'd been in sooner. I think, like that, you know, the offices where there were no Iowa staffers, I was like, you didn't really do your homework here.
Right.
But they seemed like, you know.
Real go-getters.
Go-getters, exactly.
Yeah.
And then we went to Amy Klobuchar's office. We almost didn't go in because Brent literally in the car was like, ugh, but they're going to be so annoying. And I was like, we're just going to go in. We're going to get, see what's going on. We're going to find out. Couldn't have been friendlier.
Super nice.
The height of friendliness.
Right.
They
very Iowa/Minnesota nice.
That's right. The guy was from Indiana.
Right.
Great. Like, I don't know where she found this guy, but he was an excellent staffer.
Right.
They were
the only ones that I think that had a sign in.
Yes.
To.
Yes.
I sadly gave them my email address. I'm probably going to regret that at a certain
point. Yeah,
you
will.
I'm on everybody's email
address
already anyway.
You were already on their email
right.
list. And then a woman from Ohio. They... Klobuchar has only been in the state since April, or, you know, has only had staffers in the state since April, and they'd only been in that office a few weeks, so they were fairly new to the game, and that's probably why they don't have any Iowa staffers in there.
Sure.
But
yeah.
For non-Iowa staffers,
super
this guy
nice.
Couldn't have done a better job making the sale.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. And he was really into her.
Legitimately excited about, for reasons I don't approve of.
I know.
Because he was
biography or something.
And then also, he was another one who was like, the Midwest just doesn't get a fair shake. And I was like,
oh, I know.
You literally the only people we pay attention to
right.
in a presidential
year. You're
getting
the shake.
The only shake is coming to you. You don't deserve the whole shake, and yet you have it.
Right.
But he was, you know, at least earnest about it.
Yeah.
He's a man who likes Amy Klobuchar, wants her to be the president.
That's it.
You know? Couldn't.
God bless him.
Yeah. And in a way, and
thankfully,
and,
we don't have to worry about that being a reality ever.
Thank God.
So,
but great staffer. I'd recommend any campaign hire him.
Right. I know.
For sure.
And they'll have the chance.
And they'll have the chance because she will pull out very soon. But just don't let this guy go back to Indiana.
No.
He's a great catch. Yep. Keep him in the game.
Right.
There's got to be a centrist somewhere who hire him for Joe Biden's office.
There you go.
This guy could have tried to sell us on Joe Biden. Their politics are the same.
Right.
I mean, and he's a good staffer, unlike any of Joe Biden's staffers. who were all 100% terrible. Literally, when we walked into Joe Biden's office, there was a guy who was in the front room, who was on the phone, who didn't acknowledge us. Literally saw us come in and
walked out the front door past us.
Yes.
Yeah.
On his phone. And then proceeded, after this other guy started talking to us, to come back in and keep his phone call going in the same room that we were in. It was so typical. Couldn't have been more typical. In any case, the most merch that we got was from Amy Klobuchar and John Delaney.
Right. And Pete Buttigieg. If they had it, they were happy to give it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Buttigieg only had it because they didn't have a field office yet.
Right.
Amy Klobuchar's office had just opened a second ago. John Delaney, no one's coming in for shit, so they were happy to give us whatever.
Right. Like a $26 hardcover book.
That's right. Yeah. I do feel like you were right in that John Delaney shirt is going to be like having a Lincoln Chafee for President shirt at some point. And I think we will be able to wear it, ironically. We just have to be careful.
I know. Lila and I had a very long debate that actually went over the span of a couple days, I think, about whether it was ever going to be appropriate to wear that John Delaney t-shirt.
I talked to my dad about it.
We've settled on yes.
Four years from now.
Right, I was going to say.
The next time.
Right.
We have to hold on to those.
Yeah.
But they're going to be keepsakes, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, That's going to be one of the great forgotten campaigns of American history.
Oh, for sure.
And it's going to be also a great shirt to wear in 4 years to find out who was paying attention 4 years ago.
Totally.
Because no one will remember the name John Delaney except for someone who was avidly following this campaign.
Or remembers the night that he was murdered by Elizabeth Warren.
That's right.
On live television.
That's right. And Wikipedia.
Yeah.
But so in any case, we're going to be back. On Sunday.
Yeah, we've got a special guest.
We have a special guest coming onto the podcast. He's running for state senate here in California.
Yep.
And so we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to start up a campaign in California and what it's like to run for office in general.
Yeah.
So hopefully my hiccups will be gone by then.
I hope so.
And until then, if you have been to Iowa or any early primary state and you have any conspiracy theories for us about Tulsi Gabbard signs.
Yes, because it's happening in New Hampshire,
too.
It's not
or anything else, please share. We are dying to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
It is, if it's the last thing that I do in this presidential cycle, it will be to find out who is handing out Tulsi Gabbard signs.
That's right.
And how we can meet that person, or if that person is just a Russian bot. We have to know. We're open to any theories, no matter how crazy.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to you next week.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.